On the feast of the Saints Crispin and Crispinian, the 25th of October, the French in the early dawn arrayed themselves in battle lines, columns, and platoons, and took up position in front of us in that field called the Field of Agincourt. The number of them was terrifying. Cavalry, hundreds strong. The vanguard, dismounted men, nobles, the pick of their forces, with a forest of spears and gleaming helmets. It was, at a rough guess, 30 times more than all our men put together. Our king drew up only a single line of battle, placing his vanguard, commanded by the Duke of York, as a wing on the right, and the rear guard under Lord Camoys on the left. He positioned archers in wedges between each battle, with their stakes driven in before them. The French delayed, looking for us to break in fear, or that they would obstruct our advance, or that we would be overcome by hunger, not daring to move against them. But our king decided to move against them. The army baggage he moved to the rear, so that it would not fall into enemy hands. But French pillagers waited till battle was joined, and then, owing to the negligence of the royal servants, seized the king's own baggage and royal treasure, including a sword and crown and other precious objects. For as long as the conflict lasted, I, who am writing this account, was then sitting on a horse among the baggage at the rear of the battle. And other priests present were reciting, "Remember us, O Lord, our enemies are gathered together and boast themselves in their excellence. Destroy their strength and scatter them, that they may understand, because there is none other that fighteth for us, but only thou, our God." The enemy were ready to attack, charging our archers. But they were forced to fall back under a shower of arrows and flee to their rear, except a very few who were not dead or wounded and got through between the archers and the woodland. But still more were stopped by the stakes driven into the ground and could not flee for the stinging hail of missiles shot at both horses and riders in their flight. Their catapults injured very few on our side, and they soon withdrew for fear of our bows. Their cavalry were in fear of our missiles, which very force pierced the sides and visors of their helmets. They chose to divide in three columns to hurl themselves in a fierce charge against our men. We who watched fell upon our faces in prayer, asking God to remember us and deliver us from this iron furnace. Our prayers were surely joined by all those being made in England, and our men regained their strength and pushed the enemy back. The battle was then at its fiercest. Our archers notched their sharp pointed arrows and loosed them into the enemy's flanks, keeping up the fight without pause. When they ran out of arrows, they seized axes, stakes, sword and spearheads, anything that was lying around. They struck down, hacked and stabbed the enemy. God was merciful to us and to his own soldier, our gracious king. And that little band, the Crown of England, he willed to remain invincible as of old. The strength of our men increased despite their want of food, which had previously weakened and wasted them. God took away their fear and gave them dauntless heart. Our enemy were lacking in vigor, confused and faint-hearted. Fear and trembling seized them. It was said some surrendered themselves more than 10 times. But no one had the time to take them to prison. So almost all of any rank were put to death without respite. Those of the French who fell at the front, so great was the undisciplined violence and pressure of the mass of men behind, that the living fell on top of the dead. Such was the great heap of slain that our men climbed up on those heaps and butchered their enemies with swords and axes. After some 2 or 3 hours, we thought the battle done and started to separate the living from the dead to hold us prisoners for ransom. But then a shout went up that the French rear guard, still in incomparable numbers and fresh, were about to attack. The prisoners were put to the sword, in case they should involve themselves in the fighting about to ensue. A short time after, with our king advancing, the rest of the French abandoned the field. We who had gained the victory came through the masses of slain, not without grief and tears that so many had sought their own deaths in such a manner at our hands, quite contrary to any wish of ours. and in so doing destroyed the honor and glory of their own country. I truly believe there is not a man with heart of flesh or even stone who, had he seen those horrible deaths and bitter wounds, would not have dissolved into tears time and time again for grief. The king ordered that we English were not to take more booty than was essential to our needs. There were of the French, by their own reckoning, more than 60,000 who drew the sword, whereas our little band did not exceed 6,000 fighting men. Dukes, counts, barons, baronets, near 1,000 lost, 500 knights and near 5,000 men. Almost the whole nobility among the soldiery of France. Our folk rejoiced, as from our little band no more than 10 illustrious persons were slain. The Duke of York, and that brave young man, the Earl of Suffolk, and 2 newly dubbed knights had fallen in the line of battle. The king's own brother, Duke Humphrey, was seriously wounded. The king himself had stood over his fallen brother, defending him from swords and axes. Praise God, Duke Humphrey recovered. Battle over, and in consideration of his men, the king did not resume his march till the morrow, onward towards Calais. On the 16th of November, he sailed for England.